As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. I'm Dan Bardell, and each and every Friday, myself and George Ellick will preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action alongside Bet365's Steve Freith. On this week's show, we'll talk about Ronaldo's sore back ahead of the Manchester Derby, Aaron Ramsdale's rapidly rising England stock, and will James Ward-Prowse hurt Aston Villa again? I'm going to go with yes. Right, first up though, guys, Antonio Conte is back in the Premier League. I'm excited by this. I think this will be good for the Premier League. I think it will be good for Spurs' his top four hopes, Steve. Have the odds changed now he's at Spurs?
Yeah, just a little bit, Dan. 7-6, top four, 11-8 into 5-4, top six. I know he's ex-Wolves, but I just felt for Nuno a little bit. Against United, you could just see it all tumbling down in front of him. I think it was quite inevitable. They've acted very quickly, and for me, they've got the right man in. I think it'd be good for the Premier League and very good for Tottenham Hotspur, and a clear upgrade for me.
Yeah, slightly frustrating for Spurs, George, is that they've kind of wasted 10 games because this is what they wanted back in the summer. I don't know what they've offered differently now, but he's there eventually.
I mean, you could look at it two ways, couldn't you? Either it's frustrating they've ever given up 10 games, or at least they've got a manager bad enough and sackable enough that they were able to dispense with him pretty quickly and bring in the man they wanted all along. Because there's no denying that bad decisions have led to the best outcome for Spurs. I found it quite surprising to see how much of the narrative around Conte seems to be around the way that he leaves teams after he leaves them. Now, there's no denying that some of his recruitment has been centred around buying players who, let's say, are ready to play rather than investing in youth. But the dramatic just shift in trajectory of every team he's managed in the last decade is pretty striking. I do think we are going to see a very quick improvement because he is a top-level tactician. He's a top-level man-manager, at least in the short term, and he understands how to win games of football. And he's proven in the Premier League, because that is always, you know, if you can do it in Serie A, can you come over and do it here? The answer is yes, and a resounding yes at that. You know, he took over a Chelsea side where, if you look at that team on paper and what it had been doing in the months before he arrived, for him to take them on that trajectory and make them such an incredible winning machine was nothing short of remarkable. So, yeah, a bad appointment in Jose Mourinho, a bad appointment in Nuno, and they've ended up quids in with one of the best in the game. So exciting times for Spurs fans.
George, the ever-reliable Athletic app has just dropped through some England squad news for me. So we're recording literally as the England squad has been announced. The headline news is that Jadon Sancho has had a difficult spell so far at Old Trafford. He's not in this squad. Jude Bellingham has been recalled after he was rested in the October international break. Tomori, Trippier and Lingard have also been dropped. Trippier probably a big surprise there because he's one of Southgate's favourites. And Rashford is back in the squad after injury. So, yeah, interesting. I'm surprised Trippier's gone. Not so surprised, Sancho.
I mean, it's pretty boring, isn't it? I think that there are so many exciting young English talents who you would think, given that we're playing Albania in San Marino in a World Cup qualifier, where there is no need for us to do more than just show up. Emil Smith Rowe, Max Kilman.
Yeah, I thought he'd be in Smith Rowe.
Like, why not just take this time to have a look at these players and give them a chance to impress? It just seems like a massive opportunity wasted. You know, you recall Marcus Rashford because he scored a couple of goals coming back from injury. Like, we know what he is. Would he not be better served by continuing his return to form and return to fitness without having to go on an international break? You know, you've got someone probably, you know, Kilman and Smith Rowe are the two, and you know, Ben White's been dropped from the squad, which seems pretty harsh given his recent form for Arsenal. Mason Greenwood, who is a key part of this side, who seemingly can't really get a look in. These are the guys who should be playing in these games. It seems pretty obvious to me, but instead we've got a squad full of players who have got plenty of caps. We know exactly what they offer, and I'm sure we'll win both games 7-0.
The alarming thing for me is that an Aston Villa player has been dropped. He's not even mentioned. We're so bad at the moment that it hasn't even been mentioned in the article that Ollie Watkins isn't in the squad this time around. I thought Mings might be in trouble, actually, after getting dropped last week, but we'll come on to that now. The preview of Southampton versus Aston Villa, which is the Friday night football on Sky Sports, Steve. And 10 games in, Southampton start to the season. I'm definitely not coming to you about Villa, so I'll come to you about Southampton. They've won the last couple of games. They've probably not been as bad as people anticipated. Now, I've got a couple of exciting players. Livramento is outstanding.
Yeah, I bet he's in your fantasy team, Dan, as a cheap option.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, of course he is. I think, personally, as an outsider looking in, at, you know, they're 7-2 for the top half, 6-1 to be relegated. The kind of price that they were at the beginning of the season. They've had a couple of winnable games recently. 7 points from the last nine, you know, Leeds, Burnley, Watford. You know, they've only given up 11 shots in the box against these three sides as well. So they've kind of suited. What they are doing in this early stage, as they were doing last season, we're just beating the poorer sides. You know, the bottom five sides, they took a hell of a lot of points off last season, and they seem to be doing exactly the same. I think I'd be a little bit concerned from a finishing point of view. I think they had 12 shots against Watford. Just one of those were on target. You know, I'm a big Adam Armstrong fan. George knows as well as anybody that the boy loves to shoot from absolutely anywhere, whether it be right foot, left foot. He ain't bad in the air either.
Has he scored since the first game, Armstrong?
No, he hasn't. 27 shots, one goal.
I can almost guarantee it.
Exactly. He's only had one shot in the 6-yard box so far this season, but you know, we saw in the Championship last season, he's not afraid to go either side or shoot from distance. So I'm hopeful that him and Shea Adams can particularly find their scoring boots this weekend. But I think Southampton have done as well as to be expected from my point of view, Dan.
I think there's one of my pet hates when it comes to football fan rhetoric is when fans say their team are going under the radar, because what that really means is that they're picking up points and not playing very well, so no one really cares, but they'll tell you they're going under the radar. I think with Southampton, they've got a genuine shout of being the Premier League side at the moment who are going under the radar. who are generally playing quite well, picking up points, probably outperforming, because, you know, at the beginning of the season when people were trying to find who the teams who would be relegated were, and there weren't very many obvious ones from kind of Premier League stalwarts, a lot of people were pointing out that Southampton had a very poor second half of the season last season and were possibly losing key players as well, Ings, Vestergaard. So I think they're doing okay. They didn't win a game for a long time, but they've won two of their last three. Against Leeds, they won that game very comfortably, and the data reflected that. Leeds were incredibly poor, 1.83 XG to 0.45. They then drew with Burnley, but again, won the XG battle very, very comfortably, 1.43 to 0.67. And then again, against Watford, 1.91 for 0.85 against. And even the game against Chelsea that preceded that, they lost that game 3-1. But the game completely turned when James Ward-Prowse was sent off with 10 minutes to go. And they created themselves 1.53, Chelsea's 3.79 number massively bolstered by that last 10 minutes. So, yes, they got off to a very steady start. You know, they didn't lose lots of games, but they drew four in a row, and it took them, what, 7-8 games to get their first win of the season. But I think they're trending in the right direction. We know that in Ralf Hasenhüttl, they have a manager who's very, very competent. And, you know, they're, what, just a shade of odds against to win this one. Yeah, 21-20 to win this at home to Villa, which I think is a fair reflection. You know, if you told me before the season started that Southampton would be 21-20 at home to Villa. And maybe that says a lot about Villa as well. I'd have been shocked because certainly going into the campaign, Villa looked by far the more likely these two to do anything towards the top end of the table.
We need to absolutely get Villa off these preview shows at the moment. Stop putting Villa on telly. I don't know. I talk about them too much.
Keep them on every week.
Without having to go through this rigmarole every week as well. So, Steve, Villa spent a lot of the summer chasing James Ward-Prowse. He had a very good game at Villa Park last season, scored a couple of free kicks. Villa struggling from dead balls at the moment. I wish his suspension had been a little bit longer.
Yeah, I expected West Ham to ask more questions of Villa from aerially, from set plays, and just looking at your team generally, the midfield as well, how they would benefit from a player of Ward-Prowse's quality. Clearly, things aren't going great at Villa Park at the moment. So I think I was very surprised that he dropped Mings. I thought that was very bold, and which backfired. But I suspect, Dan, that he'll be back in this weekend as well, will he, with injuries and suspensions maybe?
Yeah, I've got to say it was a decision I completely disagreed with. I just think everyone's been off form. There's no point singling out your club captain and the only organiser and leader at the club. I just don't understand. Yeah. I don't think that made the statement that Dean Smith thought it did. And then we've had to bring him on anyway, and we've conceded four goals anyway. So I'm just not sure it had the desired impact that Smith wanted. I think it was maybe game-specific, because actually Courtney Hawes did do okay against Antonio. Antonio didn't really run things up front like he has been doing for West Ham. But I think it's one of them decisions that, you know, you want it to be a strong decision, but I think it does more harm than good. But yeah, Villa in free fall at the moment. Lose on Friday and it's five in a row, and serious questions will be asked of Dean Smith, unfortunately. George, what's your tip for this game?
Close your ears, mate, I'm afraid. I think it's just a straight up Southampton win at 21-20. As I mentioned, I think their performances have been pretty good recently. And at Villa, you just got to have massive concerns about particularly the defensive side of things. Teams are able to create chances at will at the moment against Villa. And it's not ideal that you've made a big statement to drop Tyrone Mings only for the other centre-back, arguably the better centre-back, to then get sent off, be suspended, and then you've got to kind of rejig things again, not in the sense that you wanted to. So, you know, Che Adams and Adam Armstrong may not be particularly clinical so far this season, but they're certainly getting into goal-scoring opportunities regularly, and I think they will have no trouble doing so this time. So, as I say, I'd have been very, very surprised. I'd have called you mad if you told me I'd be tipping up Southampton to beat Villa at 21-20 at the beginning of November in the summer. But here we are, and I think that's probably the value in the game.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Desperate to get it away. Aldo shot. Oh, he's done it. He is quite extraordinary. He might just have saved United in the Champions League. Still the best in the business. 2-2.
Manchester derby then on Saturday, Steve. Manchester United versus Manchester City at Old Trafford. And Palace sprung a bit of a shock last week. Palace have been generally impressive this season whenever I've seen them. But to go to the Etihad, I know Man City had 10 men, and go there and pick up 3 points is still a big statement. And what does that tell us about Manchester City?
That they're vulnerable. Sometimes that can put in the odd poor performer, poor by their very high standards. But they could also very capable of just blowing teams completely away. Their home form probably isn't as good as we've as we've seen, they have dropped points against sides that you would expect, Southampton, especially at home. I know George has been very sweet since the start of the season about Crystal Palace as well. So he probably wasn't as surprised as a lot of people. From a bookmaking point of view, they were 18-1 to cause that surprise as well. I don't think we've seen the best of KDB yet so far this season, have we, Dan? You know, your boy Grealish hasn't been absolutely fantastic either. Sterling, very hit
anymore,
and miss.
Dave.
No, I know. Your
He's
former
my boy.
You know, Mahrez, you know, not performing to his normal standards as well. So you'd still rather be with Manchester City and against them. And they have a big chance today at the weekend of putting down a big statement against their biggest rivals as well.
Yeah, Sam Lee actually did a piece on Grealish in the week, George, on The Athletic. I should say, at this point, if you're not already signed up to The Athletic, then you can do so for 33% off at the moment. Just head to theathletic.com/footballpod to check out Sam's work and all the other great stuff that's going on The Athletic. But Grealish is coming in for a bit of criticism. My criticism would be that, not on him so much, but that Man City are a bit Villa-like from last season still. Just give the ball out to Grealish on the left and see what happens, which I'm surprised at. I thought he'd play through the middle a bit more as well.
Yeah, I agree. And it's almost amusing as well where the first people to criticise Grealish's form, and not saying Sam in this case, but you know, generally on social media and the like, are generally the people who said he wouldn't get a game and would be sitting on the bench for his City career as well. He's played a lot more than people anticipated he would. I think playing at Villa, where you know he was always going to have the most touches of the ball, defenders were always going to double up on him, going from that to City is always going to take time. Now, you are right. He is seeing a lot of the ball. He is stuck out on the left quite a lot and feels quite isolated. I think he would be massively helped with having a proper flying fullback to the left of him. You know, Zinchenko
has...
they're
kind of getting in the same areas, aren't they? Cancelo
exactly.
And Grealish.
And no, Zinchenko has his faults and a lot of neutral fans, I know, don't rate him at all, but I think he would be very, very interesting to play behind Grealish, where he's very capable of coming inside and letting Grealish go around him. So him playing on the underlap, he's very capable of flying around the outside as well, creating that pocket of space on the inside channel on the left. So, but I would like to see him play centrally. I think his best position still, especially in a team who have as much of the ball as City do, would be left of a three in the midfield three. Kevin De Bruyne's presence on the football pitch makes it difficult for him to get that. But as Steve says, KDB's not been in great form, and we know that with as long as Pep is manager of Manchester City, there's going to be so much rotation across the side as well. So it's November. He's played more football than even I, his biggest fan, would have thought he'd play. He probably hasn't made the impact that I would have hoped, but I mean, it's incredibly early days. You look at how long it took Riyad Mahrez to really solidify himself as a proper City first team player, and he came into the club when he was PFA Player of the Year, having just won the Premier League. So I wouldn't be writing off Jack just yet.
And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer alleviated a little bit of pressure on himself last week, Ken Steve. Came with a change of formation, three at the back, which I always find if a manager's under pressure, they quite often will throw the last dice that they have and go three at the back. It worked, but I think they've got a few issues at centre-back this weekend with injuries and stuff, so I'm not sure they're actually going to be able to do it against Manchester City. It felt like it was a week too late for Solskjaer, because I feel like that was something that should have perhaps been utilised against Liverpool, but he does deserve credit for getting it right, doesn't he?
Yeah, of course he does. I suppose he was helped by the quality of the opponent, you know, which helped massively. I don't know whether the players lost faith in Nuno, but maybe the people that make the key decisions in the boardroom, it felt like they had already before then as well, and that was just the final nail for Nuno. I think some big players defensively have just haven't performed this season for Manchester United. I'm talking about two players that were great in the summer. Harry Maguire, definitely for one of them. It was pretty poor again in midweek. I don't know whether he's come back too soon from injury. He did start with a three, didn't he? But I think Varane went off and they went back to a four, and that's when Maguire got exposed just a little bit more. Talked about, I've read some United fans talking about Luke Shaw being dropped and Telles coming in. So, you know, that's how far his standards have dropped after being fantastic in the summer. I do give credit to the Manchester United fans, whoever's in charge of their football club. I was at the Albion in midweek against Hull City. It was 0-0 at half time. Booed off. Just completely booed off. A team challenging in towards the top of the league. And no one know you'd say that. And I'm sticking up for Manchester United fans here who always seem to... I know, there were going to be boos at home to Liverpool after getting hammered like they were so convincingly just a week or so ago. But there does seem to be a lot of loyalty from Manchester United fans and whoever's in charge of their football club.
Ronaldo's in the goals, George, especially in the Champions League. I mean, at the moment, he's just in outrageous form. Some of the goals he scored have been absolutely incredible, even for his high standards.
It is unbelievable. The goal, of course, against Spurs was a great strike, and to have the anticipation to pull off that strike, even though the defender's jumping ahead of you. So he was unsighted basically until the ball was on his foot. But it was the Atalanta goal that I thought just summed him up. Just a goal out of nothing, really. It was a pretty lucky touch from Greenwood, and then he steadies himself and made the assist. And Ronaldo was there just to hit the one strike, the one place he could hit it, kept it down. And you know, how many times have we seen Cristiano Ronaldo doing that in the Champions League over the last 10 years?
Too many, George. Too many.
It's odd that some people will tell you that it's Ronaldo's arrival at Manchester United that has caused their downfall. I have absolutely no doubt that if Ronaldo wasn't at the club, things would be a lot worse. Yes, he might not press, but if you have a player of his talents, even if he's however old he is, you know, you've got to find a way to get him on the ball in the final third as much as possible. And when he does do that, he provides. So I'm really excited to see what is going to happen this weekend, because I mentioned before the Liverpool game on this podcast how, you know, Solskjaer's good record against Pep and against kind of the better sides in the Premier League would generally come when they've been set up to play on the counter, and they had not been that recently. We're starting to see more of a shift towards that more defensive mindset. You know, we saw Tottenham dominate the ball. Even, you know, obviously game state plays a part when you're 2-0 up, but they still dominated the ball throughout the game. United were very happy to sit in and let them have it. We saw Atlanta at times have a lot of the ball in United's half. You look at the goals that were scored by United against Spurs, basically all fast breaks. You know, it was the ball over the top for Ronaldo for the first one. It was a 3-on-2 situation for Cavani's. Rashford's was a proper, you know, you're 2-0 up. The opposition are chasing the game, you get in behind. So it strikes me that they are better set up now to probably frustrate City and then hurt them on the counter. The issue they've got is they're going to have Ronaldo and Cavani playing up top, you would think, from the start after their performance against Spurs. And that is not necessarily the personnel you want to be pulling that off. You know, you probably want it to be a Rashford and a Ronaldo or someone like that in order to hurt them. But it's going to be a fascinating tactical battle, because Ollie's record over Pep, I should say, is so anomalous in my head that it barely makes sense. But the latest chapter should be an interesting one with so much on the line.
Yeah, I suppose with Manchester United being at home, Ollie would like to be on the front foot, you know, and really go for it. Clearly, that's not going to work. And like George touched on there, I can see him reverting to type as he has tried to in previous games as well. I think the market expects goals in this. Incidentally, Manchester United are actually touching 4-1 to win at home. Such is the gulf between these two sides. It's probably around the same price as they were last season between these two teams. Manchester United are clearly, from a bookmaking point of view, are the fourth best side in the Premier League, according to the odds makers. But I can just see this being under 2.5 goals, which is odds against. And I'm going to go for that one this weekend.
Game 3 is Brighton v Newcastle, Saturday at 5:30. And only one place to really start with this one, George. What on earth are Newcastle going to get a manager?
I mean, it sounds like they're still keen to get one in for Brighton on Saturday. So this could...
It's a little bit late. They're leaving that a bit late.
This could age quite quickly, this conversation.
Chris Wilder.
Well, I mean, I still think that, I mean, it's not going to happen, but I still think that would be a better appointment than maybe the one they were going to pull off. Whether Emery himself would have been a good fit, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen Villarreal play a great deal in La Liga this season, but everybody who has seems to suggest there's a bit of an Ollie-Ronaldo situation going on, with Arno Danjuma being the key reason why they are having an okay season. You know, he isn't somebody who impressed particularly at Arsenal. It almost felt to me like bringing in a manager who's... You know, the allure of having somebody who's won Europa Leagues, the allure of having somebody who was once hired by Arsenal seemed to be the key reason. It looks like they're going to end up with Eddie Howe. And I personally think Eddie Howe is an incredibly exciting appointment. You've got a guy who took over a club in League Two, and except for a brief hiatus at Burnley, you know, he took Bournemouth from League Two up to mid-table in the Premier League. Yes, it unravelled towards the end, but I'm not having it that a manager's you know, final 6 months that end in relegation is in any way more important than what they do to get to that point. It's pretty rare that you get managers, you know, Chris Wilder is the other exception, who becomes a Premier League manager due to their own achievements, because they are the ones getting promoted 3-4 times to get there. You know, if you're going to list the finest achievements by English managers in the last 10 years, Howe's got to be in the top 2 or 3. So that should be exciting. His ceiling is incredibly high. He hasn't, whilst Bournemouth spent a lot of money in that time, Chris Wilder didn't get quite so much money, did he, Steve? But whilst Eddie Howe was able to do that, not many managers could have achieved what he achieved. And it strikes me as the right kind of appointment, because in Howe you have somebody who will be a step up on Bruce, should have enough about him to change the style and also improve the squad from now until the end of the season to get promoted, might have a high enough ceiling to feasibly be the guy to take Newcastle to where they want to go. But if he isn't, be a good interim manager for the next 2 or 3 years whilst they try and get there. So again, not by design. I think they've got lucky here, but I personally, if I was a Newcastle fan, I'd be happier with Howe coming into the club than I would be with Emery.
And they're also 6-5 to be relegated, George. So it's quite incredible, really. But we're talking about all this money, and they could be playing Championship football next season. It's amazing.
And Eddie Howe's got a promotion from that league, so it's perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you ask me for a price now, what price, you know, Newcastle are in the Championship next season, what price would you be them to win the league? I think it's a bloody tough one to price up, but I think you'd probably be around 4-6 odds on for them to, you know, to win the title.
Unreal.
And that you'd imagine. I also agree with you, George, there about Eddie Howe. I think there's incredible naivety from the people at Newcastle. You know, I personally thought Emery would have been a good appointment. And I know in the past I've talked about Eddie Howe. You know, people talk about this fairy tale about Bournemouth, about how he did it on a shoestring. Eddie Shoestring was a detective in the 80s. Who's, I forget. So he's certainly called Eddie Shoestring in my house. Yes, he did spend a few quid on wages, but he did do a very good job at Bournemouth, all things considered. I think it will be a step up for them as well. I think he knows some of the players there as well, some of the key players, Callum Wilson, of course, being one of them as well. He needs to get a job soon, let's be honest, because you're soon forgotten in this game as well. And this seems a perfect opportunity to, you know, get back on board the merry-go-round.
I mean, for those that say he took Bournemouth down, ultimately, yes, he did. But he did also kick them up 3 or 4 times. So he's got experience of winning the relegation battle as
I've
well.
Been a critic in the past, Dan. I've been a critic in the past. Listen, he did a good job there at Bournemouth, all things considered.
Absolutely. And for plenty of Newcastle content on The Athletic at the moment, George Culkin's your man. So yeah, there's ever-changing landscape at St James's Park. If you want to read up on that, George Culkin is your man on The Athletic. Just a quick word on Brighton, Steve. They've already having a good season. They're already an exciting side, but Tyreek Lamptey coming back, he's a class act. That's going to make them even more exciting.
Yeah, love him. Bums off seats whenever he's on the pitch, you know, even for a fullback, just how far forward he gets on. He hardly, was it 20 minutes he played against Liverpool? He had more touches in the box than Oxlade-Chamberlain. You know, he just plays so advanced there. 33 minutes against Manchester City. Admittedly, they were 3-0 down, I think, at the time when he came on. 3 touches in the box, 4 crosses, you know, get to the ball line, get it in. He had one shot on goal as well. Clearly, doesn't need to be rushed back with the hamstring issues that he's had over the last 6, 7, 8, 9 months or whatever. But it's another exciting addition to a very exciting Brighton side who are going great guns under Graham Potter. And again, who knows what the ceiling is for Graham Potter?
Yeah, I think Brighton will win this. I'm not going to tip them up at 3-5, the heavy odds on, but I think we're going to see a pretty similar game plan with Newcastle as they tried to pull off against Chelsea. And we assume Graham Jones will be in charge, possibly not, but either way, Brighton, a team who look to dominate possession, who look to have a lot of the ball. I think Newcastle are going to look to keep it very compact, keep it tight and look to frustrate. And it's something they've been able to do fairly well in the past. It doesn't normally last 90 minutes though. So I'm going to go for draw at half-time, Brighton at full-time at 100-30.
Right then, before we continue with the podcast, please remember that if you are going to have a bet this weekend, make sure that you do so responsibly. George, you've got some helpful tips on how to make sure that we do just that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners of this podcast are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older. Please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose, and do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Sunday, 2 o'clock, we have Arsenal v Watford. I think that's one of three games, actually, that's at 2 o'clock on Sunday because of the Europa League, Europa Conference and all that jazz. Steve, I may be forced to review my stance on Arsenal. They were very, very good at Leicester last week. A kind of ground where they've tripped up over the years. Pretty much their whole team is under 25, bar Aubameyang and Lacazette, and they looked exciting, and you know, you can kind of get on board with what Arteta's doing now. I'm saying this with a heavy heart. I do get a lot of stick from Arsenal fans for my stance on them, but they are looking like they've turned a corner, but they have had false dawns before. I'll throw that in there.
Yeah, they have. I suppose a little bit of the gloss has been, you know, taken off from this great recent run with Conte coming to their biggest and fiercest rivals. However, they are still favourites to finish above Tottenham, 8-13 that they do, 6-5 that they don't, and they are odds on to finish in the top six as well. So they are 2 points ahead of them. I've enjoyed watching Arsenal recently. I think someone who have watched and thought he's not at it at all is Aubameyang. He seems to be at it at the moment. He seems to be banging form. He seems to be pressing a little bit more as well. He's certainly in good goal scoring form, particularly at home. I think he scored in the last four home games as well, which is good for them. And he's got a brilliant record against Watford as well. So he'll certainly be up for it this weekend, Dan. But it's exciting times defensively, of course. And you can't really talk about Arsenal these days without mentioning Aaron Ramsdale, who's been absolutely fantastic as well. So exciting times. Looking over their shoulder a bit to their North London rivals, but yeah, after all the early criticism after those early games where they were pretty, pretty poor indeed against Brentford, Chelsea and the hammering against Manchester City. Could be good times ahead as well. And could make top six race as well a bit more interesting, particularly with Manchester United looking a bit vulnerable at the moment.
Well, that Ramsdale signing was largely scoffed at, George. I can't remember what you said about it, but you know, I was definitely one of the people that scoffed at it.
I scoffed at it. I've had about 12 helpings of humble pie. And, and you know me, I don't need any excuse to get stuck into some pie.
I thought it was needless. I couldn't get why they did it, but he's more of a character than I thought he was for a start. And he's done something to that Arsenal team because they haven't lost since he's come into it.
Yeah, I think those who scoffed have ended up with egg on their face. But at the same time, I think there's no denying that Aaron Ramsdale has been better than anybody would have anticipated and better than his performances previously have shown. You know, he's a keeper that I have had a lot of time for in the past. Anyone who was kind of laughing at the idea of Arsenal signing a keeper who'd had two relegations in a row had quite little to do with Ramsdale. But similarly, his shot stopping since he came into the club has been on another level. And he seems to be a character who's absolutely reveling in the role of being a number one keeper for a club who have aspirations towards the top end of the table. You know, he personifies what this new era and this new generation of Arsenal players is meant to be all about. And, you know, a lot of people spoke about not just Ramsdale, but laughed at Arsenal's transfer dealing generally in the summer. But now, you know, I know the sums were fairly eye-watering, but you look at how Ben White has settled into life there, you look at Ramsdale, you look at Odegaard's good performances as well, they're building something pretty special there. You know, there's no reason why these guys can't be part of a side who could develop towards the teams they, you know, they used to battle with. You know, they're obviously a long, long way off that now, and I don't know if necessarily the manager is the right person to get them there. But you know, Ramsdale rightly has been touted as being possibly England's number one fairly soon. I think it's, given Gareth Southgate's loyalty to his players, I think it's incredibly unlikely that Jordan Pickford will ever lose that number one shirt until, if and when, he does make a mistake in an England shirt, because it is incredible his consistency. You know, it would be unbelievably unfair on Pickford to lose that shirt, given how good he's been for England. But if you ask me who the better keeper is, you know, I said it a couple of weeks ago to you, Dan, I think Ramsdale will be a better keeper than Martinez. I think Ramsdale's a better keeper than Pickford as well.
Villa slander, George. Enough with Steve. We've moved on from Villa. Leave Villa alone. Quick word on Watford, Steve, then. I mean, a great comeback against Everton and then a boring defeat to Southampton. Difficult job for Ranieri. I mean, you wouldn't even bet on him being there by Christmas. It's difficult, isn't it? They're a hard club to manage.
Yeah, they're a second favourite to stand for relegation at 8-13 behind 1-12 for Norwich. Villa 7-1 for relegation. That's a bit big. Sorry, yeah. I mean, they've been very Jekyll and Hyde, haven't they? I think in the first three games, obviously the hammering against Liverpool and the poor showing at home to Southampton would be a worry. I think he's trying to get into them to start pressing more. I think he's put an arm around a few shoulders. Josh King, I think, has clearly benefited from it. More crosses in the box as well, which will be good for him. Saar's not in particularly good form at the moment, which is a slight concern. I think Ben Foster loves booting the ball up front. Whenever I was watching him under Tony Pulis, it was the long balls forward. We've seen a bit more of that. It's early days for him. Clearly, he's got his hands full in keeping in Watford in the Premier League, but I wouldn't write him off just yet.
How do you see it playing out on Sunday then?
Oh, I think Aubameyang is going to be the first goal. He's got 5 of the last 6 goals against Watford. A man in form is around 3-1 to score the first goal. I will be going for him, Dan, to break the deadlock.
Captain Sensible there, Steve. The final game we're going to preview is West Ham v Liverpool. George, actually, I know there's the Manchester derby, but this will be a cracker. This could actually be the game of the weekend.
Yeah, it should be very good. You mentioned there the other big game of the day. Well, I mean, the odds suggests that there is exactly the same chance of West Ham winning this game as Manchester United. Both teams 15-4, the draw 3-1 for both, and the away win 7-10. So you're seeing there that the lads at Bet365 think there is the same quality gap between Manchester United and Manchester City as West Ham and Liverpool, which is testament to David Moyes and the job that he's done, I think. When you look at how well Liverpool have started the season, when you look at they're just coming off the back of another dominant, albeit against 10 men, but a dominant win against Atleti in midweek, where they probably should have won by 4 or 5, but only won 2-0 because they weren't at their clinical best. You know, Moyes has now got 1,000 games in management. It's an amazing achievement, and I must say it's great to see a guy who was so widely vilified. You know, these managers, it's not often they get a second chance. And for Moyes to be given the respect that he's now being shown by a whole new generation of football fans. You know, remember guys who don't remember that Everton team just know Moyes as being a bit of a joke figure at United, just being a bit of a joke figure at Sociedad, being a terrible manager of a poor Sunderland side. It's not often that these guys get redemption. So I'm delighted for him to have got that. I think the issue that he's going to have is that he is setting himself some very high standards here. I just can't believe they're going to be able to maintain this. You know, you've got West Ham fans who are now looking at that fourth spot thinking, well, why can't it be us? United are poor, Spurs are poor, even if they've got Conte in. Arsenal still put in poor performances. They're the consistent ones. You know, that loss to Brentford being a pretty rare slip at home. So I do have some concern, especially when they're playing on Thursday nights as well.
You know, West Ham will fancy the chances, Steve. I mean, that midfield battle will be interesting. It's probably the one area of a little bit of concern for Liverpool, whereas West Ham in Suchek and Rice, it's arguably one of the best partnerships across the whole of Europe, really. So, you know, West Ham, I think they stand a chance. As good as Liverpool are, you know, West Ham are very good as well. I saw them in the flesh on Sunday. Declan Rice is on unbelievable form, unbelievable footballer. West Ham will fancy their chances.
Yes, I think they will. Dan, I just want to echo Georgie's sentiments there about David Moyes, who's got, you know, a smile on his face after some pretty tough times, I would imagine. His team are going great guns at the moment. 20 goals scored, second best XG in the Premier League as well. And some of the players that he's been coaching have obviously, you know, stepped up to the plate. Of course, you know, Antonio's been great. I think Fornals has been fantastic as well. Bowen seems to be in the form of his life at the moment. You know, I know Antonio's not scoring goals, but Bowen's dad a Villa fan? I think he obviously was pleased with last Sunday's performance as well.
Let's get through a preview without mentioning Villa. Just one of the games, please, Steve.
10 touches in the box against them, 29 touches in the final third. It's going to be an exciting game, and West Ham are going to give Liverpool a hell of a game, I would have thought. But again, you talk about the midfield, they have some injuries. Of course, Wijnaldum scored a brace, I think, for PSG. He got his first goals in midweek as well. They are kind of mounting in the engine room. Keita, he just can't seem to get a run of games at the moment, Naby Keita. He seems to be coming. I think, well, we're going to see him at his best now. And then he gets crocked, of course. Harvey Elliott's been out. Fabinho's come back. He returned against Atleti. He got an air under his belt. You know, Thiago was able to come on there. Yeah, I thought Oxlade-Chamberlain as well. He's kind of probably had his one of his best games in recent times as well in midweek. So there are options for there. I think the Firmino injury was going to be... I know they've got Jota to come in, but I think Firmino being injured is going to be a huge blow. Not for his goals, clearly, but for the way that Liverpool play, you know, when he's in the side. We're going to have some good battles all over the park. And I think this is the... I'm looking forward to this game more than the Manchester United-Manchester City game, to be honest.
My tip here, I think Liverpool will win it. And I, as I kind of alluded to there, I worry about West Ham, especially having to play on Thursday night. But I was surprised to see the price of Liverpool to win 2-0. Now, goals are certainly forecast. And you look at recent games between these two sides, basically Liverpool win them. But there are a lot of goals in them too. But I think Liverpool is still a decent defensive side. I think the 13-5 about Liverpool to win 2-0 has to be value. I can't anticipate that West Ham are going to hurt them too often and too much. It wouldn't be a massive surprise at all if it is a high-scoring game, but I think just looking at pure value, the 13-5 Liverpool to win 2-0 is the way I play this.
That's our five games previewed. Just enough time for me to remind you that you can sign up to The Athletic at the moment for 33% off, so just £3.33 a month for new subscribers. Just head to theathletic.com/footballpod. My thanks to Steve and George, and of course all you guys for listening as well. Remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss a show. And Mark Chapman, David Ornstein and company are back on this feed on Monday. You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. Enjoy the weekend's football and have an excellent weekend.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.